Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
As someone who made herself really small in the beginning of her career, I could tell you that even if you get a few cuts and bruises along the way, it is so much more fulfilling to be chasing aggressively your dreams. Because I've heard this, we'll just end with this, that like when you pass by like a graveyard, that is where you will find the most dreams, dreams that were never fulfilled. And I think for the past few years, every time I would pass by a graveyard, I would always think like, a little regret, like, what's my purpose? Like, am I really proud of my life? And I never really did feel proud of it. But even now, like, yes, my coffee shop isn't established yet, but even just this pursuit, if God forbid I were to die tomorrow, I feel so proud that I'm pursuing my dream. Like, there's so much joy in that. So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud. I'm from the loop and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm right. Hi, guys. It's your girl, Nahama, your favorite Jew from the Lou. Welcome back to my podcast. And today, I'm so excited to have Isaac with me. Thank you so much for driving all the way out here. And he's one of the first people to try my coffee for my future coffee shop. And he's a coffee connoisseur, so I'm going to learn a lot from him. But today, we're going to talk about a few very interesting conversations. But to begin with, I always like to let people know how I know my guests. And I met you at the St. Louis Sports Clinic. Mm-hmm. And you're one of the chiropractors to be.
Yep.
So why don't we get started on like how you got into that chiropractor journey and what you want to do with it?
So first experience with a chiropractor was after tearing my hamstring my sophomore year of playing baseball. Mm-hmm. I was working with my athletic trainer. Things weren't progressing kind of as fast as I had wanted to. We had had a chiropractor come in and give a workshop for us. He knew my strength coach really well. And so as soon as that was kind of at that point where like I need to make something happen or I was going to lose my season, I ended up reaching out to him, ended up going with him, and he was a little bit more rehab chiropractic based too. So it was the adjustments, it was the soft tissue, but it was also some movement therapy paired up with all those other things. Within working with the time period with him, I was able to get back within a couple of weeks and actually be able to get back out on the field, still be strong and still be able to perform well. You know, it wasn't just getting back onto the field. It was being able to get back out onto the field and still perform well. And I haven't had issues with that hamstring since then too. So I think that was a success on his end for sure.
For sure. And you were a sophomore in college?
Yes, sophomore in college.
Okay. I feel like that must be a moment when all athletes get really scared. It's when they have that injury where you're like, I don't know if I'll be able to play again, let alone perform well. Mm. So that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
So probably that was a really impactful moment for you to be able to see like, oh, wow, it's not the end all be all if I get an injury.
Yeah. And the decision to go into chiropractic didn't happen until probably a year after that.
Okay.
I figured since I was in school, I might as well go get something that was going to potentially lead me up into further continuing education afterwards. Mm-hmm. And by the time that it got around to my junior year of college and being the guy that would, my teammates would ask like, hey, like my arm hurts. Can you work on my arm? Like my back's a little tight. Can you just like get some knots out of my shoulder? Just some of the simple basic stuff. After kind of becoming that guy and being somebody that my teammates relied on, that fulfillment of helping them get back out on the field and also kind of feel good, even though it was menial little injuries and tweaks, it was still like a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed that experience of getting to help them or getting them back to feeling like they could perform well and move better without having to maybe like, stuff is not my shoulder. So,
but I think what's so great about careers is that as a child, there's really kind of one way to be successful. And as an adult, you could find like what fits for you. Mm-hmm. But they say that if you really want to have meaning in life, you're going to want to pursue something where you can give to others, where you can be in service. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like as crazy, scary as it might have been in that moment when you injured yourself, that was really fate to be able to guide you. And you're very lucky because mm-hmm. I feel like for me, my career, I worked 8 years in graphic design And it's a skill set that I was passionate about, I was ambitious in, but I never really felt like it was really a career that I was really in service of people as a whole. Obviously, I'm helping clients, but it's not the same kind of satisfaction as you get where someone comes in and they're injured. And depending on the injury, you can either cure them in that one session or at least have them feeling a little bit better and know that there is a road to recovery. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different level of satisfaction than you're going to get from like creating a logo.
For sure. That's what I mean. I can relate to the artistic side of graphic design for sure too.
Oh, really?
Because I mean, yeah, it's people like say for example for your coffee, like you're trying to design like a logo for it, and it's got something that has to kind of speak towards the message that you want to send and what your brand wants to kind of mean, and there's a lot of background meaning to it. So I think that there's probably more than you give yourself credit for in that field. But the mental health side of that injury too, and experiencing something that's keeping you from doing something that you want to do and that you want to go out and do, is a really challenging thing as well. And so there's the connection with somebody when they want to go out and move a certain way and they can't do that. It's really powerful to be like, I may not cure you, but I'm going to help you do the things that will probably help kick that can down the road, get you where we need to go so that you can do the things that you want to do too. So it's not necessarily like an if then an algorithmic, like you have this problem, we're going to do this and we're going to fix it. It's more, we're going to help get your life back on track. And so it's not always that drastic, but I have been able to, in my training thus far, been able to have those moments where we are able to actually change the trajectory of somebody else's life too and get them back to doing the things that they want to do.
Yeah. And I think for people out there, people have very strong opinions on chiropractors. I'm sure you've heard throughout the years. For me, my experience was I've been a regular going to Dr. Tony, now Dr. Nick. And I was really afraid to go to a chiropractor for a long, long time. I wasn't particularly injured. But I remember my first trainer at my gym, we were doing just like one of those clean hangs. And he was just like, oh, one of your hips is like higher than the other. He's like, you probably should see a chiropractor about that. But like, it wasn't a serious enough injury that I felt the need to go. And I think in the back of my mind, I was always afraid that if I went, it would become one of those things that I would feel that I had to go to for the rest of my life. Yeah. And so, which is what happened, but like for the best reason possible, just because, I mean, it's interesting because I'm kind of like between two phases of my life right now, you know, going from graphic design to starting my own coffee shop, going from sitting for 8 hours to being on my feet for 8 hours are two completely opposite ends of the pendulum. But either way, like you want to take care of your body. And so like, I feel like it's just like a routine thing. I probably don't need to go once a week, but I enjoy it. So it's an investment for me. Mm-hmm. And then every so often, if something does go wrong, it's nice to know that I have like you guys to tap into. Mm-hmm. So you're in what year in terms of like how close you are to graduating?
So I'll be graduating in April of next year. So I'm full year away. Yeah.
Yeah.
So last phase of on-campus clinical rotations. So I'm currently in our sports rotation at Logan. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I'll be going into my preceptorships, which will probably be with Tony at
the sports club. Really?
Yeah.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. That's really great.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a great team.
It is.
It's so cool.
That, like what you just said right there, too, like the team aspect of things, too, it doesn't get much better from what I've seen from as far as like the team setting, you know, and everybody just being jazzed to come into work and hang out with each other all day and try to get better. The team atmosphere and pursuit of excellence between everybody that's in there it's intoxicating. It just makes the day go by really fast.
It's so cool.
Everybody has that environment. Yeah.
I mean, you could see it from, first of all, the clients that you guys attract. I feel like every time I've gone there, I've made really cool connections just from other clients and patients. Who have been there.
Same difference.
Same thing. And then also, like, I know, like, Tony's so into education. And so there's that aspect of it. But he's also super chill and, like, just a really fun person. So he's created this really cool vibe where you guys are always growing and leveling up. But it's not as so intense that you're not having fun with your friends.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
And just like chilling, you know, It's so fun. Even like as a patient, it's so much fun to go there. Like it always puts a smile on my face. So
We had a really fun time at our core two meeting. We sat down and basically listed off if we were to be the worst clinic in St. Louis, like what would that look like? And so it was like, the place would be a mess. They would, the carpet would be torn. Like nobody would show up on time. Everybody would be just like lazy and not caring. And so it was a really fun exercise to try to put yourself in the opposite of what you wanted the patient experience to be, and what you wanted the opposite of your team, inner team experience to be. And
that's brilliant.
Yeah. And so then from there, then building out the core values of taking ownership of what you're doing every day to show up, like go the extra mile, always be learning, always be getting better. I'm fascinated now with a lot of companies that don't necessarily have an established set of these are the values and the virtues that we kind of stand for, and that no matter who may come or go, like if they have this brand on their chest, this is what they stand for. And so back to that team aspect, building things. Every great team in sports, in business has that set of core values, and it's been surprising to just be like, nobody has paid as much attention to that as I feel like Tony has. And so all the credit to him for, you know, like stepping up and trying to go the extra mile to set those things up so that the team has a direction that they can head in. We may not be there, but it's headed in that direction.
I love that perspective. And as a future business owner, I'm totally going to take that into consideration of everyone. I think so many times focus on how can we be the best. And it's so easy to look at that, but like thinking about what would the worst look like is a really important angle that I think a lot of people overlook, you know? Huh. I love that. My wheels are spinning so much right now.
Cause it's really easy for our brain to do that too. I think there's some research to back that up too, that like our brains naturally attach more to the worst case scenario with things. And so we're actually able to kind of not predict the future, but like we can, there's another really good book called Future You. And he talks about this too, where you plot out your worst case scenario and then you plot out your best case scenario. But usually your worst case scenario is not as bad as you think it's going to be either.
Yeah.
But you can at least have a gauge of, okay, these would be the steps to head towards failure. Like you can, it sounds like it shouldn't work out as well as it does, but you can almost like predict how things are going to go wrong if you take the time to sit down and actually think about the steps or the slip-ups that you would make along the way to get there. Not necessarily saying that you have to like sit there and ruminate on them and think about like, oh no, I can't do these things or else I'm going to fail. But it gives you a mindset of like, okay, if I don't wake up every day and do the work that needs to be done, then this will eventually happen because I already know how it's going to go in my head.
Well, I know that from just me personally, but then also just talking to just people around me, people have so much fear in their heads about the worst case scenario. And one of the coolest things for me about getting older is that like I now have the life experience of living through some of the worst case scenarios. And not that they were great by any means, but they were never as bad as they were in my head. And you're also so much more capable than you give yourself credit for, because I think that's what we forget. We forget that like, yeah, maybe bad things can happen, but like we are so capable that we can rise above like humanity as a whole. Like we have so much ability to rise when things are really tough. That's when the strongest people are made, you know? What's that thing where it's like, I've said this so many times on my podcast and I can't ever remember it properly, but it's like bad times create good men create good times create weak men, and weak men create bad times.
Pretty sure
that's spot on. Yep. I think it's finally registered. For those of you who don't know, Logan University is probably one of the best chiropractor schools in the United States. And so people come from all over. So you're not from here originally. Where are you from?
Washington State.
That's right.
Not DC, the state.
Mm-hmm. So it's probably been really hard for you to like be here away from like your family and...
Yeah, I actually spent the last 2 years of undergrad in Oklahoma, so I was a little bit more familiar with the Midwest than, for example, my wife was. We got married right before moving here. We moved to St. Louis sight unseen. I had drove through here one time. Other than that, like, I had never been to St. Louis, didn't really know a whole lot about it, and so we just did the best we could on Google to find a place to live, and... it was pretty much like a no-brainer for Logan as far as like the quality of schools.
Yeah.
And that would be the best opportunity. Luckily, my wife was like, yeah, whatever we got to do. And she was willing to have her first major job be over here as well. And so the transition was definitely tough. But luckily, being in school, I think that was gave me a social network.
It does.
Pretty quick to... you know, just have like friends and still be able to maintain connections. My brother's over in Kansas City too, which is great.
That's great. So
I have some family close by. A couple of my buddies from undergrad are down in Springfield. So it wasn't complete isolation, but yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, flights keep getting more and more expensive. And
especially to the West. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, for sure. Like we got our tickets like 3 months in advance and we're still paying. My sister's getting married this summer and we were still paying. Thank you. I did a whole lot of work for it. But there was over $1,000 to fly back for two people for like just 2 days.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I was going to guess that tickets would probably be between $500 and $600 a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we paid.
Yep. Yep. There was a time when I guess I'll say this to her. There was a time when I met a guy through a dating app and he was living in LA. Mm-hmm. We hadn't met in person, but we were like going on a few dates, like phone dates. This was back during COVID too. And then he ended up ending it. And like my cousin was like, duh, have you seen the plane tickets? He's like, nothing against you. It's like, it's just the price. There's like no way. Like dating long distance from like LA to St. Louis would be crazy.
And luckily there would be major cities, but yeah, that's a...
That's a lot. That's a lot. Especially if there's people local. That's a lot.
Yeah. There's St. Louis is a big enough pond.
LA is a big enough pond. He'll be just fine.
Yes, that's true too.
But so I think there's something really empowering. I was thinking about this a lot recently where there's been, especially I'm from St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Born and raised. My family's been here for over 100 years. So I'm very much rooted here.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really left, but there's been circumstances where I've been placed in like new situations, like going to college for the first time, didn't know nobody when I went to college. And then also the different jobs that I started, like starting fresh. And I don't know about you, but like as scary as it is, it's so empowering to know that you can just start from scratch and build a life.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Like the first away from home experience, because I'm from a really small town too. Like my graduating class was 27 people, so mm-hmm. really small town. Going over to Spokane, Washington was the first college venture, so that was the junior college experience, playing baseball there. And then going to Oklahoma, it was kind of what you said, it was scary the first couple of days. You know, I had my five army duffel bags and I packed through the airport and I showed up to a dorm room and parked down. I had one teammate that I knew from there. Other than that, I didn't know a single person there. And I was there, I don't know why, but I got there 3 days early before practice started and before, like, it's like a week before school started. So there's nobody. It's like just me on campus.
Wow.
And so there was a couple of days where I was just sitting by myself in a dorm room in small town Oklahoma, just thinking,
what have I done with my life?
What have I done with myself? Yeah. Like, what did we get ourselves into? Looking back on it, very fortunate to have that experience too, because to your point, that was a major icebreaker. You can go out and kind of do whatever you want to do. Like, you shouldn't be scared to go out and do something that you've always wanted to do or continue on a journey just because it's in maybe another location and you don't know people. Like,
mm-hmm.
you can do it, you know? And it's made the world a lot smaller of a place. Me and my wife talk about this all the time too, because that was kind of her experience moving here. You know, like she like she didn't have anybody that she really knew out here. A lot of the connections were through me, but she's had to develop her own connections in St. Louis and around the area. And us being able to travel, and we took a big trip out to the East Coast. Mm-hmm. We road tripped. And so we've been coast to coast now of the United States and got to see a lot of the states. And it's just made the country seem so much smaller than I think a lot of people would ever imagine. And it's so much more accessible, and there's so many cool things to go out there and see. Mm-hmm. And it's just a little bit of time and a little bit of just planning out. And I mean, we camped it the whole way too. So we got to go stay in all these random campgrounds from here to the East Coast.
That must have been so beautiful.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Great weather. And
can't ask for better than that.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
We were driving through a tornado at one point. Like the edge of a tornado we were kind of going through.
Do it so. For the plot, though. Like, yeah, what a great story.
Yeah, it was a story. Afterwards. It was a storybook moment, yeah. At the time, we're just like, okay, you know, we'll get stuck. We let our family in a couple of different places know what was going on in case everything shut down and we got stranded somewhere. So,
right.
Good. Back to what you were saying about worst case scenario is never as bad as it ends up being. But
everything's figured outable is really what it comes down to.
100%.
Yeah. I think what's really helped probably in your story too, though, is the fact that you were married mm-hmm. throughout a lot of these things too, because having a partner in crime makes it a lot more fun.
100%.
Because it's you guys against the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you clearly met very young. How old were you exactly when you guys got married?
21. Oh, so we met when we were 21. We got married when we were 20. How old am I now? We were 23.
23.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that there's, okay, so Jewish culturally, there's like obviously different times in our culture when we get married, but mm-hmm. like from like a basic American non-Jewish perspective, I think that there's a few different phases of when people get married. Mm-hmm. There's some who get married like right out of high school sweethearts, like now that they're finally legal, they get married.
Yep.
Then there's the ones who like met in college, who get married pretty young, like around, I would say 23, 24, 25, there's mm-hmm. that window. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, you're single for a few years, you get, and maybe you meet someone like, I don't know, work or dating sites or whatever. And then there's like, I would say 27, 28, 29 is like another phase.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't paid too much attention to the 30s yet. I'm not up to that. But those are like the windows that I've seen
yep.
where people like kind of get married. So like for me, maybe for other people, 23 sounds like really, really young.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's so young just because culturally, we do usually in the Jewish Orthodox community get married around like 21, 22 is I think pretty normal for a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And guys are usually like 23, 24.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not abnormal to me. Yeah. But from your perspective, why did you guys decide to get married so young?
So I actually misspoke. We met when we were more like 19, 20. So we did distance for 3 years.
Oh, so it was long distance first. That's
yeah.
hard.
Yeah. So we
could survive that.
That's kind of what we figured too. It's mm-hmm. There was a phase where we had decided try to make it work. If for some reason it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But at least we said that we gave it the best shot that we could. We tried to make it work, and because there's no reason to not try at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the entire process, it was like, this is still going really well. Like, and it was more of just the timing of things, and then COVID hitting, it just made all the sequence of events seem like really off. And obviously going to Oklahoma was only supposed to be a 1-year ordeal, it turned into a 2-year ordeal. But that decision-making process of me saying like, hey, like I probably knew that I was going to propose at that point in time before making that decision to go back for that fifth year. I said, part of this is your decision too. Like if this is something that you feel like is going to be hard on a relationship, I don't know if this was worth sacrificing our relationship for one more year. And she knew that it was something that I wanted to do and that I would regret it. And so she said, I want you to go.
That's awesome.
And that was definitely a seal the deal part. I better get this girl a ring. Yeah. Like this is a keeper for sure.
Yeah.
And my parents got married pretty young. I'm one of 8 kids. And so they started having kids pretty young, and I'm
where do you fall? Family.
I'm second in line.
So you're second to oldest.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my youngest sibling is 12 right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's been wild to see so them go fun. Through stuff. Yeah. Because I mean, I have a younger brother that's going to be a freshman next year in high school. And so I've been like, I've been out of college for, or out of undergrad college for 3 years now. And so it's been like fun to talk to him and try to help him kind of through his journey of getting into high school sports and going through all that and seeing all of them. My sister just broke the school record for the discus yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My brother was an eighth grader playing up in high school. And so they're all killing it. My sister throws hammer and was doing shot put at one point, but mostly throws the hammer at my alma mater in Spokane.
Yeah.
And she placed sixth overall at the conference championship. So it's just fun to see everybody just crushing it right now.
Yeah. And I think there's something really special about big families too.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just awesome. And I think it's kind of something that you don't see every day anymore.
No.
A lot of people would consider a big family like maybe 4 kids, 5 kids. They're like, whoa, and you say 8 kids and their mind's like.
Yeah.
But I have heard that like, so first kid is an adjustment. Second kid, you feel more okay because you're like, okay, I kind of get the gist of this. Third kid I heard is just like rough. And then fourth kid, again, it's better. And then my brother said like after 4 kids, it's just,
it's all just downhill.
It's fine, actually. No, not downhill. It's more like it's not a problem. Like it's not as overwhelming as people think.
Okay.
Simply because like the older kids are older now, so they're not as reliant on you. They're helping out.
Yeah.
And then also at that point, you're just not as like OCD of a parent where you're like so nervous about every little thing. You're like, they're kids. It's dirt. It's fine. You have a scraped knee. Like you'll be okay.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Like, throw some dirt in it.
Yeah, like if some kids yell at each other and they're like, I want you to die, I'll be like, yeah, okay, it's fine. Like, you know, it's just like kids being kids, you know, versus like the first time you're like, no, we don't speak that way. And you're much more like careful. So
yep.
I think you just chill out as a parent. But I think it also has to depend on your personality, right? But I think if you have like two really high functioning, like healthy parents who are chill, it could be a really beautiful thing.
I think we just wore my parents down and they just were just like, just screw it.
Probably. You're probably a second to oldest, seeing that your younger siblings are getting away with a lot more than you did.
That's always how it works. I try to think I'm special in that regard, but I think that's how every family works. Yeah. The baby always just gets away with murder.
Yeah. You're like, wow, we literally have two different parents.
Well, okay. The crazy moment about that from a culture standpoint, like did you have a Game Boy growing up at all or play?
I didn't, but like that was my generation, so yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So I asked my brother, because I try to like collect like all the old stuff. I'm a big nostalgia collector, and I asked my little brother, who is going to be a freshman, I'm like, hey, he's like, do we have any like Game Boy stuff still laying around the house? And he said, what's a Game Boy? It's like, oh my gosh, like we have completely different, like we almost have two completely different lives.
Yeah. I mean, well, if you think about it, technology is so fast now.
That too. Yeah.
What would the equivalent be, like a PlayStation? Like, would that be his thing now? Or
he would have been around like at the, he would have been like at the last couple of like Xboxes too, though. So like he hasn't got to see what like an original, like he hasn't got to see what a Nintendo 64 looks like, even though that was kind of like the back end for me, like a GameCube. So like for some reason, those like for, I feel like for our generation is a pretty, like those were like the thing. And so culturally, you can kind of tell where you were based on what kind of console was out at the time. I don't know why, but that's just kind of like how categorize timelines of things.
That's so funny.
Because it was like, what, every 2 years they came out with a new console.
Yeah.
So you can kind of like place your timeline along there somewhere.
It'd be interesting to ask my brothers what theirs were, because I'm 28 and my brothers are 8 and 10 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to see generationally like what they would have played, you know?
Yeah, like they would have had to be like Nintendo 64 for sure. Like that was like, they probably got to see like day one, like they got to get the new cool, the blown in the giant cartridges to get it to work. Yeah.
Probably.
I have to ask them actually.
Yeah, cool. I know. I got some homework to do now. I'm going to talk about my brothers next time I call them.
All right.
But I think, so it's interesting because this is a perfect segue, because a lot of what we wanted to talk about today was also just like masculine and feminine energy, traditional homes, which, you know, clearly you come from a traditional home. Mm-hmm. And also this is making more sense to me now, because stereotypically, if you say you're from the West Coast, I would think that you're probably more, a little bit more liberal in your mentality. But the fact that you're from a small town kind of changes that a little bit as well. So I think personally that like first wave of feminism had really good intentions and did a really good thing. For example, certain freedoms that I take for granted that I think are great for women to have, like the ability to own a banking account. That was something you couldn't have unless you had a husband. So that's crazy. Or to have any credit or to own property or to be able to run a business or just equal pay. You know, I think those were all things that are wonderful. We have that ability and to vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's all great. But I do think that there's been like a pendulum shifts, right? Where it's been, it was so extreme before on what women's rights were. And now it's shifted to, we have so much freedom that I think it's affected the way we interact, like men and women together, friendships, professionally, romantically. I think it's changed how marriages work, dating has worked. It's literally just infiltrated everything. And I don't think it's been for the better, especially recently.
Would you say freedom or would you say expectation?
In terms of
like more like the more freedom or the more like the women are expected to do X, Y, and Z. Necessarily like they can do whatever they want, but now it's beyond a point of like freedom. It's now like expected that you're maybe supposed to do this. Like as a woman, you're kind of expected to maybe have a career. You're expected to go through dating with a certain protocol comparatively to times in past. Like, would you say that it is more freedom or would you say it's more of the norm?
I don't think a lot of women feel a lot of freedom about it anymore. Mm. I think we love to have the option, but I think the expectation of that we have to be equals is not something women really want anymore. Mm-hmm. Now that depends because I have had some recent conversations and like I've talked to some women who have come from pretty traumatic experiences where they weren't around good men who didn't treat them right, whether it was family life or marriage. And so they're very scared and traumatized to trust in a man, which to that I find totally understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But that is coming from what the professionals on TikTok would say is you're like wounded feminine, right? Mm-hmm. But I think when I've had like deeper conversations with these women, they did want the traditional life. They did want to find the love of their life. They did want to get married and to have kids. But the problem was they just never found a man who was right for them, mm-hmm. who treated them that way. And so they don't feel safe. And so what women will do is they'll build up this masculine energy to protect themselves. They step into that masculine role because they didn't have a man to do that for them, whether it's a father or a loved one. And so the world has created a space where women can go out and provide for themselves. But what has happened is these women are, and I could speak for myself because I've had to do this with my father. He was diagnosed with dementia 4 years ago. And I've dated, but I'm not married. I don't have like that one person who's like been there for me. So I haven't had that masculine role. And even though I'm such a feminine woman, I've had to step into more of a like taking care of myself role. And I could honestly say after having to do that for like the past at least 4 years, it's like I feel burnt out. Because I think men, if they have a family to take care of, they're like empowered by that. They're energized by that. It gives them purpose. It makes them feel so much better about themselves. Mm. But as women, we don't feel energized by that. We're exhausted.
Mm.
So it's like it's not that we aren't capable of doing it. It's just that our energies would be so much better utilized in other areas.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I think what started off this conversation of us wanting to do this podcast was I had read this book a while back. I'll link it over here, but it's called Taming Your Alpha Bitch. And it talks about how like really it was within the past 50 years that women were allowed into the workplace mm-hmm. for the very first time. And as women were acclimating and rising to the ranks of VPs, CEOs, COOs, all these different levels, right? They only had men to look at as examples of what those roles should be. Problem is that when a woman emulates a man, she comes off as a bitch. She doesn't come off as like a man because she's like calmed down all the beautiful energies that make her a woman and becomes a very masculine woman. And she's offensive to other women and she's offensive to men. And men will match your energy. Mm-hmm. So if a woman comes across as strong and like opinionated, he'll match you. But what's also interesting, and you could jump in at any time, is that like men, I feel like the meaner you guys are to each other in your friendships, the more you like each other.
Mm-hmm.
But like you're not, it's not ingrained in you to treat a woman like that. And so usually if you're like matching her energy like that, it's more of like you're threatened by how strong she's coming across.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, Miss Ma'am, let's match those energies. Yeah. You want to be treated like a man? Well, let's go.
It's not like a tit for tat thing at that point. It's an actual like I need to, like asserting dominance would be a strong way of phrasing it, but it'd have to be like
accurate though.
Yeah. Like I can still come up to that level, you know, like I'm not just going to like sit around. And like you said about matching or trying to like emulate that, emulate the CEO executive guy role. Like it's, that exchange never works out. Like if you got like a female boss kind of like talking shit to you, it's like, as a guy, it's kind of like, oh, is she actually kind of like criticizing maybe something I'm doing? It's just, the exchange is different.
Think about like a mother versus a father energy, yeah. Right? Like a dad shows his love a lot of times with being hard on his kids, and like they'll kind of get like that's what dad's like. But if a mom comes across with that same energy, you're like, why does my mom hate me? Mm-hmm. You expect love, you expect nurture from your mom. So it's a different energy. And so what this book does, and I think it's so brilliant, is first of all, it makes you really assess what energy you're in, because you may not be aware that you're bringing that energy in. Because what a lot of women have, a new age problem that we've had to face, is we'll go to work and we go into maybe our more masculine energy to rise in the ranks. And then the problem is not only are we not being perceived the way we want to be perceived at work, we'll come home and we'll bring that energy with us. And it affects our romantic relationships, our friendships, and like with our family as well.
Yeah.
So learning how to navigate that. And there's like quizzes throughout the book where you can test to see how you're interacting, to see like, oh, where are you actually really holding with this?
Yeah.
And so I think what it is, when you were saying that before about like asserting your dominance, I think the reason why men may feel that way is because it almost feels like woman is like barking and like attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, we're not chilling here. Let's figure out the energy here, because there's like a mismatch.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like, I do think that women have so much to contribute in the workplace. And in terms of intellect, talent, innovation. Mm-hmm. But like we have just the same way diversity of different cultures and religions and races can bring about a really interesting diversity to a workplace. I think the same can be said for women bringing their feminine energy into a workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's more nurturing, where there's more care, being a leader that like cares about your employees and like talks to different employees differently because you know that they're going through different things at home and caring more about their personal life.
Mm-hmm.
That creates a very different work culture that I think is important. And so I think it would be really cool to see like in the next 50 years, women coming to the workplace with that different feminine energy versus trying to emulate their male counterparts.
Yeah. And even to go back to the conversation we were having earlier about core values and virtues too, at a certain point, you can bring your individual spin on the workplace, but as long as it fits in with the core values, like it doesn't matter, you know, like I wouldn't say that it's necessarily like any of those values are either masculine or feminine. They're just positive values. And maybe a female could emulate one of those values better than a male could, but that's complementing the business and the team as a whole, if they are able to embrace some of those with a little bit more of a stronger personality trait than say somebody else would be. So I think that's the other beautiful thing about that within like a workplace, is like you have to establish like what everybody's got to be doing, and then somebody can maybe be like, okay, like I'm not very good at that, so maybe could you help me be more good at this? Or maybe that person is in a role that would be more suited to their personality, whether that be masculine or feminine, and then everybody can win with that combination, and everybody kind of just finds their own role within things. It's like, nobody's going to do every job well.
No.
That never works that way.
No.
And so then you can, if you have the set of, this is what we're trying to accomplish, this is how we're going to do it, and these are the values we're going to keep along the way. Okay, you are, based on your personality, are great for this role, you're great for this role, you're great for this role.
Yeah. And I would say from like personal experience, like starting my my coffee business, my business partner is a man. I'm a mm-hmm. woman. And I love it because the way we've kind of broken up our roles is that I always say he's the brains and I'm the heart. Mm-hmm. That's how we like do it, where it's like, this is my vision and this is my passion. And I love like the people aspect of it. So I'm going to be more in charge of like daily operations, working with the customers that are coming in, working with our teams, like, you know, training people in. And he's much better. Is that even English? Okay. He's better at like logical mathematics, finances, the business, like overhead, like what makes sense. Like, yeah, we have a great idea, but like, how can we make the math make sense? How can we make mm-hmm. this from like a business perspective make sense?
It's like, it's just like bitter enough, mm-hmm. but it doesn't overwhelm any of the other like floral tastes or anything else.
I want you to remember this because I have a honey Colombian roast. So when you guys come in, I want you to, I have curated my light, medium, and dark roast, and I'm so proud of it. They're single origins, 100% Arabica. Really good.
So hard to do, too. Like, single origin? That's such an accomplishment to get that list of things right there, that list of accolades. That's, yeah, it's awesome.
So I have my light roast, which is a honey Colombian. My medium roast is a Guatemalan. Mm-hmm. And my dark roast is a Sumatra.
What's a Sumatra?
Sumatra is an Indonesian blend.
Okay.
And we were talking earlier. Guys, we're totally sidetracking. I'm so sorry. we were talking.
Coffee talk.
Yeah. Coffee talk. This is my life now, and I love it. We were talking about how you were saying how when you first started drinking coffee, especially because you like hot coffee, mm-hmm. you liked a dark roast. Mm-hmm. But then as you started probably trying better end quality coffees, you got more into the medium to light roast. Mm-hmm. So I still want to have a dark roast because I think it's important to have that. Mm-hmm. But what I really wanted, this is what I mean to say when I'm not like necessarily a logical person when it comes to business. I'm very like, but I have that passion about it, right? And I know the experience that I want to create. So when I found my coffee roaster and I was like, let me just explain to you the experience that I want each blend to give my people. So I said, for my dark roast, I want something really rich and bold and earthy, but not like bitter. But something that's going to bite you in the face, mm-hmm. you know?
That's because that's a tough task, because as soon as you get things just a little too burnt, that's when it starts to like the bitterness will just take over.
It took everything. A lot because it's so cool going to the place and seeing the actual roaster, because there's so much that affects the temperature, how long you let it roast. There's this little vent which affects how smoky it's going to be or not, because that was the other thing. I'm not a really big fan of smoky coffees. Mm. And I'm also, when it comes to my late roast, I'm not a big fan of coffees that are high in acidity. Mm-hmm. So that will be ones that are more citrusy. I'm not really fans of like the lemon or orange kind of citrus. I want more cherry undertones mm-hmm. in my light roast.
Knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. I know. I'm so excited. So I'm really proud of my light, medium, and dark roast. I'm going to use one roaster for that for sure. Mm-hmm. And then every month I'm going to use this other roaster and have a specialty roast a month. And if people like it, I'll keep it on the roster. And if not, every month there's going to be a new one.
Or you can do a club thing where it's like you get special access to that if you pay for like a subscription or the membership.
There is that, actually. And then also, not only that, you get to be part of the board that gets to like taste test and vote on what you want the flavors to be. So it really is like your partner, not just a member. Mm-hmm. And like there's going to be books too. So you're going to be like have access to like which books we sell at the store. Because mm-hmm. it's not going to be like a Barnes & Noble. It's going to be more curated.
Yeah.
So.
That's awesome.
I'm so excited. I'm basically creating a space that I want to be in.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, hey, I'm on board for it. It sounds awesome.
Just a side story to share. We kind of just jumped into this, but, you know, talking about wanting to be in service, like, I think I've really could be a great graphic designer and build a beautiful career around it and make great money, and it'd be great. But I just somewhere along the way have lost my passion for it. And I don't think I ever really had the kind of passion I have for coffee. And so what I want to do now is I was thinking about it. I'm like, if money didn't matter and I could just do whatever I wanted, what would I want to do? What do I love? I was like, well, I love talking to people and I love coffee and I love books. And then my cousin, he said that if he's a partner in a law firm, so he's not going anywhere, but he's single-handedly keeping Starbucks in business. So he loves coffee. And we were talking about 2 years ago and he was saying, I was like, I want to start a coffee shop. And he said, oh, me too. And he said, I think everyone kind of does in the back of their mind, like it's everyone's kind of plan B, but it's my plan A. And he said that if he were ever to start a coffee shop, he would call it Coffees and Contracts. And it would be a place where lawyers can woo their clients in a non-stuffy environment. And so I took that idea and I built on it, where I could have this place where, but you know, not just lawyers, but entrepreneurs, bankers, real estate brokers, anybody can come and woo their clients. But then we have like more of the quiet private room. You have to have 5 to 10 years of business experience to be a member. If you have less, it's potentially you could be one, but you need a reference from a member. And then to go into the meeting rooms is a, you know, a more private space where you can woo them or just talk without having to worry about people overhearing you.
Yeah. And it's a space for people because a lot of businesses like to go outside of their own offices if they want to have like a bigger meeting, like they don't have a quarterly meeting. It gives them a cool space to go into and brainstorm, come up with all the new ideas, like check in on tasks and objectives, and they can just be outside of the normal everyday grind part of their office too. So,
and there's nothing like it in St. Louis, in Missouri, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because if you go to a lot, I love coffee shops. I have so many that I'm a fan of here in St. Louis, but majority of them kind of give me a like bohemian modern vibe. And they're great, but I'm old school. Mm-hmm. I want something that's like cigar lounge meets the library of Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
You know? And I found it. Also, like, I feel like God kind of put little hints along the way that like brought me to this path. And so on TikTok or Instagram, I should say, I confuse it too because I'm old. But like on Instagram, I saw this place called the Bibliotheque. It's in Lower Manhattan. And I was like, oh my gosh, it exists. If it exists, I can make it and I'll build off of it, you know? Anyways, I actually just flew there 2 days ago. I went in for just one day. I had points, which paid for my ticket and paid for my hotel stay. So in my head, girl math, it was a free trip. And I went into the shop and I met these two lovely ladies who are following my podcast now. So you know who you are. But we had a whole little chit chat, just two strangers. I sat down at the bar. We talked for like 2.5 hours. And I was asked the barista / bartender, because it's a wine bar and coffee shop, and it's like literally everything. I'll link it if you guys are curious, and I'll show you after. But then I saw the owner, and I asked the barista, I'm like, do you think I could talk to him? And he was like, oh, yeah, for sure. And I was like, I did not fly halfway across the United States to, like, be shy now. He's here. Let me make my introductions. I've been following his story, too, reading, like, articles on how he got started, because he's literally living my dream. So I went over to him and I was like, hi, you don't know me, but I know you. And I said, I love what you've done here. I'm inspired. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, and I literally flew here just to see your space. And the fact that I get to meet you is surreal. And let's talk. And he gave me like a bunch of insights. Then I asked for his number afterwards and the conversation began. So
let's go.
You never know.
Heck yeah.
So cool. It was so cool. I was like, hey, I can't believe I just flew across the world to go to a bookstore. But yeah. You know, got to do what you got to do. I'm a businesswoman now.
Heck yeah.
It was so great. It was so great. And it was such a great experience. And like, you know, Instagram is not reality, but their Instagram doesn't even do them justice. Like walking into that store was like walking into like the future of what my place is going to be like. And I'm just so excited to take his idea and then build off of it. Because right now his is more of just like a public store, and me creating like a membership base is also very good for investors, because then they're like, oh, okay, you know, there's merit to this. We could see that there's going to be money
Yeah, I mean, there's like exclusivity is always like people like to have exclusivity.
Well, especially in certain neighborhoods in St. Louis, they'll eat that up
for sure.
For sure. No, but your team is going to be so helpful because the St. Louis Sports Clinic, Tony told me that you guys love coffee, mm-hmm. and I have all type of coffee drinkers over there. But I want to do a cupping course mm-hmm. with you guys, so I think that's going to be awesome.
I'm looking forward to it. Kind of like what we were talking about earlier. It sounds like you were Tony has a good saying. I don't know where he got it, but there's a different, like, you have to have like integrators and innovators. It sounds like you're more of the innovator and your partner is more of the integrator, the behind the scenes, getting the numbers lined out, and you've got the vision and the goal and you're like, okay, we can do this. We can do this. I'm like,
yeah,
I found that like analogy to be true for a lot of circumstances is that you gotta have the visionary and then you gotta have the person that's like, okay, how's this actually going to get done?
Don't roll your eyes at me. For my Zodiac girlies, I'm an Aries. He's a Virgo. This is perfect.
Does that work out? Is that?
Well, for business reasons, for sure.
Okay.
Because like as an Aries, the best way to describe an Aries is like a bull in a china shop. We just don't think head first. We'll make it happen. And if everything falls apart, it's okay. We'll fix it. Like, it's just this like childlike, it's okay. Okay. Everything's fine. You know, like anytime you ever see like those like little videos of like a child like running into danger and like everything's chaos around them and the child's just like, that's my personality. And somehow everything turns out okay for me. So
yeah.
I think it's all good. You know, yeah. I think I used to be way more of a fearful person. And through my 20s, what's been so great is like learning to leave that like anxiety behind mm-hmm. and just trust me and trust my gut and trust God and know that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, you have to. At a certain point, if you're just thinking about everything that can go wrong, doesn't leave a whole lot of room for your mental bandwidth to say like, okay, this is the stuff that I actually want to do. This is the things that need to get done. Like you only have so much capacity to get stuff done.
And you just get tired of being small.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm in a really cool space in my life too, where it's like, not married, I don't have kids, I'm not in a relationship right now. So if there ever was a time to totally invest in a business, this is the perfect time in my life. Mm-hmm.
Especially with a high leverage opportunity that there's not anything necessarily that's like that too in town. You got to figure out, there's a lot of, you have the role model in Manhattan to kind of go off of, but you don't have somebody in St. Louis to kind of be like, okay, they're doing this, so this is successful. No, it's a bigger jump than that because it's, mm-hmm. like we're hoping everything should make sense for this, but we gotta make it work and you gotta right. overcome the obstacles along the way.
Yeah. And that's where it comes into like some of the back end stuff too, where it's like, do we make this a venture capitalist type of business plan or do we make it something we get like an SBA loan for? Talk to banks. Banks generally don't like to invest in brick and mortar because it's not a great investment from their perspective. But that was the conversation that I did have with one of the vice presidents of one of the local banks where we were talking and he said, okay, but like, what's a good example of something here in St. Louis that's like it? And I'm like, well, nothing. It's an innovation, right? Like it's something new. Mm-hmm. And it's not that he didn't think it was a good idea, but from like a banker's perspective, they need a little bit more of safety versus like an investor. You find the right investor who like really buys into the plan and buys into the passion. They're like, all right, let's change the world. Let's make this happen. Mm-hmm. The Virgo aspect, going back to what I was saying with my partner, is like Virgos are very like analytical, detail-oriented, make a plan, and like they don't really fail a lot because they are just always thinking about worst-case scenarios, rainy days, and like making those plans. Mm-hmm. So, but the fact that I'm saying that he's so logical and he still sees merit in my plan makes me feel confident and validated because mm-hmm. it's good to have someone who's practical still see yeah. merit in your plan. You know what I mean? It's anybody helpful. Can talk the talk, but finding someone who's like, okay, we can make this make sense. It's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine so.
Yeah.
Or you can just, you know, put your nose down and just bolt through the brick wall until it happens.
I heard this the other day where it's talks, I have ADD. A lot of entrepreneurs have ADD or ADHD. Mm-hmm. And there was this way that this entrepreneur, like on Instagram, he was saying, the thing about us, if you have ADD or ADHD, is sometimes you are just too stupid to quit. Because sometimes you see people who are CEOs or like entrepreneurs and like they're brilliant. And sometimes you're like, they're not that smart. Do you know what I mean? You're like, they're not that smart. How did they get into that position? And I think it's just that they will not stop. Mm-hmm. Like when most people would be like, okay, let's pick the safe route. Let's do what's logical. Let me find that comfy 9 to 5. Give me the golden handcuffs for the rest of my life. They're just like, or, and then they just keep trying, you know?
That's like, that concept applies to so many different things, like as particularly in fitness and in education and just your career in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more of the result comes at the back end of all the work and the longer time period of everything. Because people going, I think, to the gym and losing weight would be the best example, because it's not going to happen in a day. Like, you can go get a surgery and have it happen in a day, but a lot of the times you're not like, people don't see results of their and the fruits of their labor until months and years down the road.
It's usually years.
Yeah. And so people, when they set goals, like I'm the most like anti New Year's resolution person, because I'm like, what if you have, if you want to start something bad enough, you're going to do it right now. You're not going to wait until the new year to just be like, oh, I'm going to pick something that I'm going to set myself up for failure in. People don't have the skills of goal setting figured out very well. And so part of that is, are you willing to invest in something and have it be for the long term? If not, and you're not willing to do it, and it's like, okay, like,
that's fine.
Yeah,
that's,
you don't want to do it, like, hey, all the more power to you. But if you could come back and be like, oh, I need to lose weight. Like, oh, I need to do this. Like, I need to make this call so I can get this job. It's like, it's going to happen when you put in the 10 calls to the 10 different places that you want to work at.
And get no before you, million
before
times.
You get a no. Yeah. And so is it being, I don't even say it's being stupid, because like, you just apply that idea and it happens, for multiple different things to get success, is you just got to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And it takes so much longer to happen. Yeah. And because it's, unfortunately, humans are not as fast as adapting as we think we are. Like at the bottom end of, if some things are going really wrong, we can switch it around, but it's just like the daily, hourly, minuscule changes that you can make that end up getting the result long-term. It's the, I don't know. It's like, you don't even really see that until you stick with something long enough to see if it's going to work. Most people just throw in the towel way too early on stuff. And so it's at least motivation when you do that once or twice with a couple of different things and you're like, oh, okay, like I got to stick with it. And that you compound that over 2 or 3 years and you're like, this is just now part of who I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because you get to a point, you're just like, okay, I can go and I can be like a normal average Joe person and I can be happy with that, fine. But if I'm going to strive to be the greatest at whatever I'm doing, what are the similar things that other people are doing? Like, what is the Manhattan coffee shop doing that nobody else is doing right now? What are the character traits? What are the things that he did to get him and his journey to where he is right now? What did he do? I think you can take every example from sports, from successful business owners. Look at like Jeff Bezos, you look at like Elon Musk. Like, there's the reason that these things happen similarly, or at least that there's similar traits, is because they just stuck with it over the long term. They weathered the storms throughout the process.
Yeah.
And man, it's just, it sucks because you see so many people that are just like, no, just like stick with it a little bit longer. Like, I promise it'll get better. But it's, I think people want to have this like radical change because they're emotional about it. And it's said like, oh, I'm this way, I don't want to be this way, so I'm just going to put all this effort in. If it doesn't happen, then it's like, ah, it wasn't meant to be. It's like, no, like you have to change who you are to get the result that you want to be. It's not just.
Right. You have to become the person who already has the goal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not necessarily saying you have to be Elon Musk. You have to be any of these other people. And you
whatever your vision was, I'm saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do the daily tasks better too.
It's the small things that make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
My business partner, he's always saying his version of success is that every single day you're working towards progress. As long as you've worked just a little bit every day towards progress, to him, and then it's a win.
Yeah.
Because it's that compound interest. I think it was Alex, I always pronounce his name wrong, Hormozy.
Yeah.
He says that with entrepreneurs, it's not a matter of failure or success. It's a matter of sticking it out long enough to see success, or quitting before it becomes success.
Yeah.
It's not that you failed, it's just you quit too early. So, and I think, to be fair, going back to that original thing where we were saying, you know, hard times create strong men, that whole cycle, we live in a time where we have so much privilege and so much ease, and things are so easy for us that, like, we have 2-day prime shipping where we didn't have to leave our house and it comes to our door. We have DoorDash. We have Ubers. We have so much that is instant gratification, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it does, I think, affect our perception on how fast we should get results.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, even from my perspective, because, like, weight loss is something that I've been working towards for a long time, and I have not reached my goals yet, but I just don't quit. But I definitely hiccuped. So I think that's why I haven't, like, gotten my goals. But it's like I always still have that goal to keep jumping back towards.
Mm-hmm.
But I think something that I've done too, where it's like you'll see when people have gone through a major weight loss, they'll have like that before picture and that after picture. And I'm like, oh, it takes so much effort for them to like do that whole transformation. But as a consumer, you're just seeing that 1-minute clip of all those like hours and days putting into it. You get inspired, you go to the gym for like a month or two,
mm-hmm.
and then it's like life happens, something distracts you, and it's like the ability to stick it out, even then, that's when you're going to see results.
Yeah. And it's not even from like, you don't want to be like condescending towards people that go into it with the quick result, you know, like you got in the gym, like that's the best first step. But I don't think there's enough people preaching the message of that it's not always easy for everybody, you know, like it may take you like half your life to get towards a goal, but are you willing to stick with it that long to get there?
My aunt is I have two aunts who are amazing examples of this, actually. One of my aunts, you know, what's weird is I never even realized that she was fat just because she was my aunt and I loved her and I never just saw her in that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, she was a mom, she had a mom bod. And so I never really thought, I don't know, I guess in my mind, I was like, moms look like this. You know, some moms were skinny, but that was weird. I don't know. And then, like, I guess that was just my perception of it. And her girls were, like, my cousins are very skinny, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, size 0, size 2 kind of skinny. And my aunt was also very thin when she was, like, 16 and, like, younger and whatnot. And she said, oh, I want to be as skinny as I was when I was 16. And I'm like, you're never going to be as skinny as you are when you're 16. She is. She did it. It took her, I think, 3 years total,
mm-hmm.
but she went on this plan. And when the thing about my family is when we decide we want something, like really want something, we are like all in.
Yeah.
And she did it. And she looks phenomenal. And now she's a coach for other women. And I think she's getting like her, I'm going to have her on as a guest too, but I think she is getting her certification to become a personal trainer as well.
Heck yeah.
Because she was so inspired by her journey that she wants to help others. And
yeah.
Also as women, whenever you see one woman succeed, you're like, what's your secret? What'd you do? What's the magic pill? Like we're all like that.
Oh yeah.
And then I have another aunt who also, it took her, and it's not that she wasn't putting in the work. She was going to the gym. She was following diets. It just took her a long time to find the right diet for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally did, and she looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's so cool. And I think there's that also where it's like the goal remains the same, but how you approach the goal, being open to that changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just something that not enough people talk about.
Yeah. It's it's not completely like flipping around. Like you don't just be like, okay, like we're trying this and we're gonna go with that. Like that gets exhausting too. Like, okay, we're trying this diet, then we're gonna try that diet, then we're gonna try that diet. It's like, well, okay, we always like
what can you stick with in the end of the day? What like going to the gym is great, but if you're not gonna go to the gym, don't pressure yourself to be a gym person. Maybe be a walker, be mm-hmm. a runner, ride your bike. There's so many ways that you can be like moving.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be one way.
Yeah. And then your aunt being a great example of it too, like she's gonna help so many people probably subconsciously too. They're gonna get better results from a mindset standpoint because they've been able to see that her transformation was pretty quick, really. Like to get to that point in 3 years is actually pretty
also in your 50s incredible.
Yeah,
like most people are like, well, if it hasn't happened in your 30s, Guess that's your lot in life.
How it's going to be the rest of my life. Yeah.
Doesn't
so,
have to be.
Yeah. So she's going to help, even if it's maybe,
you know, she's
not
boxing.
The perfect, oh my, that's awesome.
That's so good cool.
Hell yeah.
As like a religious woman to be like boxing. She's so cool. Like, yeah. I'm so excited to have her on. And I think her trainer is actually like a world champion too. She said I should have him on mm-hmm. as a guest too. So
heck yeah.
I'd have to go to Chicago and do a little podcast trip.
Take it on the road.
Yeah. Right. It's only 4 hours, 5 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
But back to an earlier conversation, because I am curious to hear from a male's perspective, because mm-hmm. as someone who's single and has a lot of single girlfriends, different age ranges, something girls have talked about is that guys just aren't chivalrous anymore mm-hmm. and they just don't know how to treat girls. And I have been humbled, and I am trying to humble some of my friends in terms of saying that, like, I think back in the day, like in the 50s and 60s, as a culture, there was more chivalry, where men were raised to treat women a certain way regardless of how they felt about them. But nowadays, you still have men who are raised well. And if they are, mm-hmm. then they'll still do that. But I think some men just don't have those examples in how they're raised anymore. And so culturally, and I think also women are like, don't open the door for me. Don't pay for me. I could pay for myself.
Yeah, it's crazy, but it's happened.
And so that's shifted things again. And that's an example, in my opinion, of like a bad thing that feminism has done. Because I think women don't realize that, like, men aren't the most verbal at mm-hmm. expressing how they feel. So for them, doing action, like planning a date, paying for a date, opening the door for you is a way that they're showing that they care. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really sad that it doesn't happen universally anymore. And a lot of these girls are ruining it for the girls who still want that treatment. Because mm-hmm. guys are just confused. They just want to make us happy.
Yeah.
And they're just trying. And they're just like, every girl is so different. That there's no universal way for them to act. And so, but what I have learned from my personal experience and also from my friends, that if a guy likes you, he will do what's right. Mm-hmm. He'll show up correct. So if a guy is not being chivalrous with you, probably just doesn't like you,
mm-hmm.
to be honest. What's your perspective?
I think to your point too, we probably live in a bit more of circumstance where like, a girl would have to probably maybe also make more of a first move. I think with the current climate of things, I think it's with a girl who is looking for a more orthodox masculine guy. And a lot of times if there's a really masculine guy who has been maybe shut down a couple of times, I think he's less likely to put himself out there, and he's going to be more observant and kind of just see. Mm-hmm. And personality wise, we're also, that plays a factor into things as well. But if you're a more extroverted female looking for that, like, I don't think you should be afraid to maybe approach a guy who you kind of maybe get a sense that that's like the type of guy that he is. And unfortunately, I don't think that that would be like in a perfect world, but I think that that's just kind of like the current climate it is, because I think it's intimidating for guys, because they don't want to be like rejected. Don't want to be a creep either. Like, that's the worst thing that a guy who
has good intentions
wants to be labeled as, and that sticks with you a lot of the times too. I don't think a lot of girls realize that is like it spreads around, that kind of reputation, and it's not even necessarily what's said, but it's just how girls act around him. That's on the guy at a certain point too. But I think that also you talk about as a female putting up that masculine guard, I think a guy like just doubles down. So you become very calloused. And it's okay. Like, you guys, like, I'm not getting the attention from a particular girl that I would want. So I'm just going to callous myself off, and I'm just going to wait for probably a time when my stake or my reputation is better, or maybe I move on to somewhere else, and then things will change. Because like, say, high school or college or something like that, first impressions always matter. And it sticks around with you quite a bit. And until you get to a point where, like, you have a career, you have a house, like, you have a lot of the material things to potentially attract somebody in, I think it's tough when you don't have anything, because you are just relying on your reputation.
That's such a good point.
So if you don't, like, you have like your little 2006 Honda Civic and your reputation and your actions, if you mess up once, it's a tough comeback after that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a balance, right? Because girls don't want to be a guy's mother, And they don't want to be the one pursuing either.
Mm-hmm.
Girls love to be chosen. Like, that's a great feeling.
Yep.
But I think it's more of when you say, like, making the first move, I think that's more of, like, it's okay to say hello. Make eye contact. Just chit-chat with them. Like, be their friend without the intention of, like, oh, my gosh, we should go on a date.
Yeah.
You should plan it. Here's all the things. Like, don't be aggressive.
Or, like, even showing up to a scene that potentially would have those guys in it too. Like, like understanding which maybe places and situations to be put into where you're going to find guys like that. And that's,
which is why I'm starting my place, because I want to create a space where men and women are kind of over the bar scene, over the club scene, and want to meet someone who's going to bring a book to a bar and is educated and has a good career, but like at the same time is just chilling.
Yeah. And you make friends there. You can network there. Like, I think that
just helping
people. Yeah. Helping people in the community. Like, we don't have like a great community feel with people that are sharing those virtues and sharing those values. And I was fortunate enough, because I can't really speak to like being a 30-year-old or like a 35-year-old single person and trying to handle that dating scene.
Thank God.
Thank God. Yeah. I'm now kind of in the phase of like, I've kind of gone through my journey, and then I'm seeing and trying to help as much as I can with the guys that are around my age, just cause like that's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough. It's like, it's tough to find a place or a community to find and meet people. And I was lucky enough to get set up through, I became friends with a lot of my wife's friends. And so it was kind of a natural,
organic
thing that happened.
Our friends knew each other, set you guys up.
Yes.
That's usually the main way that people meet. It's like,
yes,
it makes sense because your people are going to know people who are like-minded.
Yes. It's vetted at that point.
Exactly.
And if you, I mean, shoot, if we want to go back and look at things traditionally too, it was more traditional for for the father to present suitors to the daughter and say like, hey, like if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But at least this guy is vetted. Like I know that is where his family comes from. Like I know that he's not like a POS. Like we at least have some filtering system for this so that if you guys connect, like if it's great, if not, you know that it's not going to go super, super sour. And so I'm not necessarily advocating for that system to come back, but for myself as like a brother and a future father to try to find a better way of socializing and building a community and integrating my family within a strong community of people that I trust, that has other strong men that I trust, that have wives that have similar values as my wife and my family does, so that even if it doesn't work out, it's the growth of community is exponential at that point. So maybe it's like they wouldn't marry somebody who we're really close friends with, but maybe they have a family who's a close friend, or maybe they have a friend who's a close friend, because people tend to attract people that are of a similar mindset.
Exactly.
And so if we really get down to brass tacks on that conversation, especially from a guy's standpoint, it's also trying to build up your own community of other guys, one for your own mental health sake, but for then you can take that as being a better or a more positive thing for your family life as well, is to be integrated with other guys and other families that are of like mind for the benefit of your entire family, potential suitors for your future children, you know?
Yeah. So basically, guys, just go out there and network
community. Make friends. Network with people that you like.
Yeah. Make friends and everything will work out in the right time.
Yeah.
Okay. So this has been such a great episode. We've covered so many different topics. I do have this tradition. At the end of my episode, I ask my guests to share a life quote or life lesson that was meaningful to them, because this whole podcast is based on this Hebrew quote, which is Ezehu Chacham, Halo Made Mikol Adam, which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone. And we have learned so much from you, but if you can give us one last little nugget for the road.
Ooh, because we talked about this, and I think I'm going to stick with my Ray Lewis quote, which is, if you're not pissed off to achieve excellence, you're accepting mediocrity.
Ooh, that's so perfect for everything we've talked about today.
Yeah. And I tend to be, and I get labeled this, but I kind of accept it too, that I tend to be a little bit more like aggressive towards like my goals. Like kind of probably the same as you, or just like, I'm kind of like the bull in the China closet, where I'm going to just put my head down and I'm going to keep pushing forward, and shoot, I'll probably go off the sideways, but I'm not going to accept mediocrity. You know, I'm not going to accept being less than what God wants me to be, or what God has made me capable of doing.
Yeah.
There's people relying on me. There's only so many days. There's only so many years. And I'm going to go out there and get it every day with as much vigor as I can possibly put into it.
And as someone who made herself really small in the beginning of her career, I could tell you that even if you get a few cuts and bruises along the way, it is so much more fulfilling to be chasing aggressively your dreams. Because I've heard this, we'll just end with this, that like when you pass by like a graveyard, that is where you will find the most dreams, dreams that were never fulfilled. And I think for the past few years, every time I would pass by a graveyard, I would always think like a little regret, like what's my purpose? Like, am I really proud of my life? And I never really did feel proud of it. But even now, like, yes, my coffee shop isn't established yet, but even just this pursuit, if God forbid I were to die tomorrow, I feel so proud that I'm pursuing my dream. Like there's so much joy in that. So love that.
Heck yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
This is great. Thank you guys for listening. And if you are in St. Louis and you want him as your chiropractor, he's out helping. He'll be doing the precinct soon.
Yep. St. Louis Sports Clinic.
Let's go. And we're having Mackenzie on next week. So
nice. Another awesome. She's person. The best.
I'm trying to get everyone on the team on eventually.
Let's go.
Let's go. So you guys, you could find us everywhere where you can find podcasts. We are on YouTube and Spotify and really everywhere. So thank you guys for listening. I hope you have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.
Let's go.